Paper 32, section 4, which is old single column, page 362. And before we get going on section 4, just flip back for a moment to the previous section, to section 3, the sixth paragraph, paragraph number 6. And then also rolling into number 7. There's a couple things that I didn't expand on last time that can serve as an intro this time to kind of get us back up to speed. Remember that, you know, we were putting the warning out in front of ourselves last time. That they were definitely encouraging us to have courage, you know, to do just that, to be encouraged, to bring courage within, to take on a bigger perspective on God, on our relationship with God. And remember how they were talking about the relationship of the Universal Father personally to the universe of universes. In other words, outside of the central universe. And making that, stressing it really firmly that the only way that you can get at the Father who isn't directly personally present out here is starting with the foundational fact of a Creator Son and developing a relationship with the kind of truth that directly is related to fact. In other words, truth that's tied to experiential eternity. So going beyond your initial relationship with truth in an existential sense of truth, beauty, goodness, getting into that fact, truth, goodness mode, and that's not easy. And then on top of that, once if you can achieve some measure of that, they tell you it is the subtlest of threads of truth that you're seeking to feel, in the core of your inner life. So, it was a lot different than believing that God is just, an exalted anthropomorphic idea that could be standing in the room here right now and could say hi to us. He can't be that immediate because his infinite nature would fill the room and my lungs and everything else. There wouldn't be any room for me. And so at the end of that sixth paragraph, they're speaking to that, it's just right there, that second to the, the third to the last sentence. Let's read that one as well.
In section 3?
Yeah, I'm going to read here. I'll read that. Yeah, in section 3, paragraph 6.
We'll let you read.
Yep. Just this idea that they're stressing that I was just pointing out. So they say, the surest safeguard for the creature throughout the long struggle to attain the Father during this time when inherent conditions make such attainment impossible is tenaciously to hold on to the truth fact. See, there it is, that fact, the foundation and the truth that engages it. Hold on to the truth fact of the Father's presence in his sons. And then they're reminding you of some of the subtlety of that in the next sentence. So they say, literally and figuratively, spiritually and personally, the Father and the sons are one. So let's look at that. You see that the pair there. So in terms of the immediate message that they're speaking to about the personal presence of the Father, it's like, well, okay, so if I'm going to try to find the Father through the Son, okay, what about that personal issue. Notice what they say. In terms of personally, it's figuratively. Okay, not literally. Just figuratively. Are the Father and the Sons one personally? Basically, why? The Father, Universal Father, has a personality, and any Creator Son has an absolutely distinct personality. There's not one iota of overlap of those two personalities. They're absolutely unique, absolutely separated. No overlap. There's no literalness to that personal representation. It's just figuratively. In other words, when that person, that Creator Son, acts, he is God. Is there going to be any conflict with the will and the acts of the Father? No, of course not. Okay. In that sense of the unity of all God, you have a representation of the Father. I mean, when Michael was aligning his will specifically to the will of the Father during his seventh bestowal, you would see it a little more, than at other times. But, it was only then that he was doing that, that he was really sort of, trying to just really set aside his own direct acts, as perfect as they are, and just act as if he were the Father, to the best of his understanding of the Father himself. I mean, remember, Creator Son doesn't know the Father is infinite. Creator Son just knows Universal Father in part, just as we will. So, there's no way he can represent the infinity of the Father. But,
It always seemed interesting that they would use that he was within the will.
That he was...
Within the work, within the will.
Oh, uh-huh. So you can kind of just see that. I mean, in the infinity, we're all within that. If we begin to have a manifestation of divinity, a manifestation of aligning our will to the perfect will, it all is within that infinity. Okay, but they do say literally, okay, and there it literally goes with spiritually. Okay, now why? What exactly there? We certainly could call a Creator Son a spirit being, and we say God is spirit, and yes, but a little more specifically, so that you can really appreciate the literalness of it, why they said literally, remember what a Creator Son is in terms of deity. They're called a Creator Son as the foundational deity that is their nature, sort of their body, their self, if you will, is the same type of deity that you have at the core of the Eternal Son, the Son-type deity. So you have the Son-type deity, but then you have the Eternal Son bestowed a measure of his flavor of deity, and the Universal Father also bestowed a measure of his flavor of deity, the Father, that type of deity. Added on top. So, it's the Father hyphen Son type deity together. The Son is the foundation. So you literally have some Father type deity within a Creator Son. Okay, the fundamental quality of deity is unity. And in terms of a fact that we could relate to, we can't directly experience the deity, but we can experience the spirit of a Creator Son. Spirit is the unity substance. So in terms of the three energies, matter, mind, spirit, and spirit substance, that unity substance, unity-like substance, it's going to give a very direct representation of that unity that's the fundamental quality of deity. Now, it's not just pure Father, of course, so you've got to separate that out. It's part of the subtlety of it, like they're saying, and it's dominantly Son. So you can kind of think, in that sense, the Father is sort of a recessive, nature. Okay, but nonetheless, there literally is Father-type deity. So, so spiritually, unity-like, the Father and the Sons are one. Okay. Now, I belabored that a little bit because you'll see when you go to the first sentence of the next paragraph what they say. There's a direction that they're wanting you to begin to go if you're ready to think about things in a little bit more precision. Fundamentally, to really begin to take on the challenge of the fifth ethical revelation. Jesus, Michael just stuck to giving you a presentation of the universal Father from an individuality perspective. He encouraged you to think of him as an individual, a person. Now he was made sure he understood he was your spiritual Father, emphasizing that. So you didn't get too anthropomorphic about this individuality, But nonetheless, he was getting you started with that. But the fifth epical revelation is wanting you to, take it a little further. So notice what they say in the beginning of the next paragraph there. Paragraph 7. The personalities of a given universe are settled and dependable at the start only in accordance with their degree of kinship to deity. Okay? Doesn't say with their degree of kinship to God. It says deity. Because what they want to encourage you to do is to really go to the foundation of everything. Paper 105 is entitled Deity in Reality. In the very beginning of the foreword, they say they're going to tell you about deity in reality. That's the fifth epical revelation. That they're encouraging you to take that next step. Having found God personally, now penetrate to the foundation, to the deity. Okay, and that fundamental wholeness that's there, the fundamental quality of deity is unity, not individuality. The fundamental quality of an individual is individuality. Fundamental quality of deity is a unity. Even if that individuality is God, they're trying to encourage, notice what the context is, settled and dependable. Do you want to be grounded, stable, sophistry proof? Do you want to have cosmic integrity? Do you want to have spiritual strength? You say, well, if I get a hold of an infinite individual, that ought to be pretty strong. Can you do that? Are you an infinite being? No, you're a lowly finite being. At this point, we're all very ignorant, barely out of the womb. No matter how much we stretch to try to grab a hold of some very high God individual, it's going to be a very tiny thing that we manage to get a hold of yet. It's not going to be very sturdy. Your grip on an individuality can be broken. But if you get a hold of the whole, then you're sophistry proof. Nothing can break you. You have strength. That's what they're encouraging you to do, is to penetrate to that foundational level. There's something more fundamental than God. Okay, but not from an individuality viewpoint, but from a unity viewpoint, from a deity viewpoint, there's something more fundamental. So they're encouraging you, see, to take a top-down point of view, to reach up personally, get a hold of the highest individual fact, God, and do a chin up. Get up there and turn around and look at everything from the top down. And when you're looking at things from the top down, you see what's the foundation of God is. Foundation of God is deity. You know, and through deity, then you engage all individuality. Through your relationship to the whole, you engage individuals. God or me or anyone else. Okay, and just, you know, in that context, remind yourself what they do in section 2 of the foreword when they formally introduce the word symbol God, G-O-D. Now, if you remember there, they say, God is a word symbol designating all personalizations of deity. Okay, now notice the clever way they worded that. So it doesn't assail your individuality viewpoint right away. But you know, look more closely. It doesn't say God is a word symbol designating a personalization of deity, or even the personalization of deity. You know, or any, or each, or every, or any. It says all. At the same time, all personalizations of deity. Collectively. Is God. In other words, you know, let's just let go of the individuality viewpoint and just say it more directly. God is personalized deity. Okay? So you have the unity that is deity. And there are phases in that unity that are personalizable. Those phases of the unity that is deity that are personalized are God. Not an individual, but just God. And they tell you, now it's not just one facet. You at least can think of, from that unity viewpoint, that God has facets. Because deity has facets. So personalizations of deity has facets. There's facets like the Father, that facet of deity. There's the Son, there's the Spirit, there's the Supreme, there's the Ultimate, there's the Mother, there's the Absolute, etc. The sevenfold. Those are facets of deity. From the unity viewpoint, if you think about the personalization of those personalizable facets, you call that personalized deity God the Supreme, or God the Father. Okay? But it's all just God. It's all personalizations, or it's, you know, the totality of personalized deity is God. If you begin to think of that word symbol with that definition from that top-down point of view, letting go of the individuality viewpoint, you know, and holding that in mind as you read throughout the Urantia book, you'll notice times when they don't specifically want you to think about the Universal Father. They say God. Now, they tell you, you know, that certainly initially you can substitute the Universal Father as you're starting to try to understand that, but it's probably not just a random thing that they didn't say Universal Father. They stuck God in there instead, because they're, from a full perspective, there may be more going on there than just God the Father, just that one facet. And then on top of all of this, you know, once you have God defined in, from the unity viewpoint as personalized deity, there is non-personalizable deity also. Some facets of deity are non-personalizable. And coincidentally, there's a very important one that is actually the foundation that you seek, you know, the Paradise Trinity, that facet of deity. That's what you're really seeking, because it's the whole. It's the only facet of deity that touches the triunity of reality, the whole. You know, and where does the triunity of reality end and the Paradise Trinity begin? I mean, they merge, you know, see, really, at the highest level. So that's what you're seeking. It's like, well, but the Paradise Trinity is an existential fact. And if I remember, Chris said one time that if you begin to think about it in more, you know, precise terms, you can talk about that from an individuality viewpoint as the co-infinite one. That's a pretty high reach. It would be nice if this is what I'm really trying to do, if there's some mechanism for reaching up through from this lowly finite estate where I find myself all the way up to there, so that I have a relationship with the whole. And there is. There's a continuous spectrum of deity, comes all the way down from the Paradise Trinity, right to my cheek and my hand. Okay? The mother, that facet of deity, fills that vertical domain. Okay? And that is personalizable deity. God the Mother. But this is not the Trinity that's going. This is the Mother type deity. And that is personalizable. God the Mother is a valid designation. That type of deity, the Mother, is personalizable deity. So you can stick God in front of it. Okay? And it's not just, and see, now to really understand God the Mother, see, how far have we left behind the individuality viewpoint? Don't go, it's like, well, is God the Mother standing over there? Or, no. See, stop thinking in an individuality viewpoint. God the Mother is everywhere within. Okay? And that fact that there is deity that is immanent, it's not all without, like the Father-type deity, the Son-type deity, the Spirit-type deity. You know, there's this deity that's within, especially the Father type, you know, is even when it's within, it's sort of hidden, so it can't, you know, kind of get direct access. All right, so this is what they're really trying to gently do, see here. Once you get to the point where you're not just reading as this the first few times and trying to strike step with something beyond your initial monotheism, you know, and trying to wrap your mind around creator sons, and it's like, oh my gosh, there's 700,000 of them, you know, and there's not just one, and all these sorts of things. Once you get past that, see, this is what they're trying to get you to penetrate to the foundation. And they did it very subtly, see, with these two things that I've read here. They're not giving you an easy way out by saying literally personally or saying God. See, they're leaving you unsatisfied and searching for something to grab a hold of. And it's deity that they're trying to get you to find the foundation there. All right, so if you've done that, when you go to read the next section, you know, there's some additional thoughts that you have in play when you're reflecting on what they're saying. So let's jump into that and see what they tell us here in section 4.
God's relation to a local universe. Excuse me. Do not entertain the idea that since the Universal Father has delegated so much of himself and his power to others, he is a silent or inactive member of the deity partnership. Aside from personality domains and adjuster bestowal, he is apparently the least active of the paradise deities in that he allows his deity coordinates, his sons, and numerous created intelligences to perform so much in the carrying out of his eternal purpose. He is the silent member of the creative trio, only in that he never does aught which any of his coordinate or subordinate associates can do.
Okay, let's just, you know, start with what you immediately recognize from an individuality viewpoint. You get this whole delegation thing that you're trying to wrap your mind around, and you notice that they're not giving any wiggle room. He never does aught, you know, which any of his coordinate or subordinate, okay, and now we're not even talking about God anymore. We may be talking about a planetary prince who can come sometimes be a little nearsighted, okay? Which any of his coordinate or subordinate associates can do. But, you know, just look at what they do. Okay, the title of the section is God's relation to the local universe. And then you read the first paragraph. Deity partnership, paradise deities, allows his deity coordinates. Just, God doesn't appear in the paragraph. See, again, see, it's there. They're trying to get you to recognize that the way this actually, this delegation happens is via deity and divinity that's related to that deity, you know, divinity, deity likeness. And in some cases, if it gets very subordinate, it may be, just like I read back there, settled and dependable at the start. Okay. I mean, because deity is giving rise to that divinity, I mean, at the start, you know, that Lenonidec that came to be named in English Lucifer, was solid. But God also gave him the ability to override that initial divinity and turn it 180 degrees around. Okay. But that's the initial thing to just appreciate. Initially, you're thinking in individuality terms, and you're thinking about, you know, this super manager on high delegating, you know, in a way that we think of it. But it's more literal than that. Deity is being doled out, and then divinity is being bestowed relative to that deity that's been doled out, and down the hierarchy it comes. Okay, and that's how that distribution occurs. Okay, see, so again, deity. Begin to think of things in this deity context. And it's not individuated. It's the fundamental quality is unity. See, don't allow yourself to break it up. Let it be holistic. And change the way you think about your relationship to God. You know, that you're immersed in the context of the ubiquity and unity of deity that you have this relationship to God. It's impossible to be alone in such an enwombed environment. Okay, then they go on. Now we see the word God starting the next paragraph, though.
God has full understanding of the need of every intelligent creature for function and experience, and therefore, in every situation, be it concerned with the destiny of a universe or the welfare of the humblest of his creatures, God retires from activity in favor of the galaxy of creature and creator personalities who inherently intervene between himself in any given universe situation or creative event. But notwithstanding this retirement, this exhibition of infinite coordination, there is on God's part an actual, literal, and personal participation in these events by and through these ordained agencies and personalities. The Father is working in and through all these channels for the welfare of all his far-flung creation.
Okay, that last little part you see was kind of like what we were talking about back up there in the previous section. You know, here they're letting it kind of just be more direct. Back there we saw them saying figuratively and testing our readiness for the facts a little bit. But you just see, notice now, were you keeping in mind a bigger idea of God? I mean, you see the second time they say, you know, God retires from activity. It's like, well, okay, there you see, you know, seems like really in line with replacing that by the universal Father. But, you know, notice to start out, God has full understanding. I mean, if you think of it in that totality sense, instead of the individuality sense, it's like, it doesn't seem so mystical and magical anymore that some remote infinite individual can have a full understanding of the need of every intelligent creature for function and experience, etc. I mean, if it's the fullness of God, who's within and without and up and down and sideways and, you know, everything you can think of, it's everywhere, there's personalized deity, and it's all God, see, then it's more direct. You know, and we know about that whole bosom of the Father statement. You know, bosom tends to be a word that's associated with mother rather than father. You know, now you can see it directly. The bosom of the Father, the bosom of God the Father, is that other facet called God the Mother. It's all one God. Okay? But it's a facet of deity that's within, that you can lean against. like your mother. All right, and so that's what I'm saying. Just notice when they don't get specific, you know, and put in a God, and think, it's like, well, is there a bigger picture there that I could see? And usually, if you can see that bigger picture, it's more immediately understandable, actually. You can think very literally about a connectivity instead of having to just imagine that there's some mystical linkage. And so that should give you greater comfort, knowing that you don't have to depend on the vagaries of mysticism to have a relationship with God. It's just as literal, you know, as reaching out your hand and touching the fact that there is God here. It's just not God as transcendence. That would be illogical. As transcendence, that means on the outside. What facet of God is within? God is immanent. Okay. They're trying to actually evolve your understanding. But you notice how masterly they've done this, you know, so that it allows for an initial kind of magical sort of individuality picture. But they're hoping that you'll remember eventually how they define God up in the forward, and that they didn't define it from the individuality viewpoint. The fundamental definition was from the unity viewpoint. Okay. That's the God they're hoping you'll discover through the fifth epical revelation. God from the unity perspective, God from the top down. The God that you can only see when you plant your feet in the cosmos instead of in fear, desperately reaching up through faith. Mere faith. All right, let's get a little more.
As regards the policies, conduct, and administration of a local universe, the Universal Father acts in the person of his Creator Son, in the interrelationships of the sons of God, in the group associations of the personalities of origin in the third source and center, or in the relationship between any other creatures, such as human beings. As concerns such associations, the Universal Father never intervenes. The law of the Creator Son, the rule of the Constellation Fathers, the system sovereigns, and the planetary princes, the ordained policies and procedures for that universe always prevail. There is no division of authority. Never is there a cross-working of divine power and purpose. The deities are in perfect and eternal
Unanimity. One mind. Mm-hmm. See, and why? Because they remind you, deity is one. Fundamental quality of deity is unity. See, the deities are in perfect and eternal unanimity. Not through some mystical linkage between individuals. It's because it's just one unbroken infinity of deity. Okay? It can't help but be of one mind. And by the way, deity is innately minded. That's another thing. So when you think about the mindedness of the Father or the Son, or of a thought adjuster, fragment of deity, where you don't have the simple way of understanding mind, where you have a material like individuality and spirit-like unity and the associativity of mind linking those two substances. And you don't have that with the Son or the Father or an adjuster. Well, it's because there's an innate mindedness in deity. I mean, what you really need to do is begin to think of deity as a fourth substance. Okay? And that substance is innately minded. It's not subsequently minded, like when you have this matter and spirit separated and then mind linking the two so that you can have a triunity again. There's this other fact, deity, that's innately minded. You just see how they're constantly doing it. They didn't say the gods. are in perfect and eternal unanimity, because they wanted you to see it more immediately. You know, where it's just, there's nothing really to figure out about that statement. It just is a simple statement of fact when you see it from a deity viewpoint. Okay, now...
Why do you use it in the plural?
Because, like I said, because in order to understand deity, you need to appreciate it as facets. That's the plural. Remember, and there's a spot in the book where they tell you that it's impossible to understand anything if there isn't some sort of separation that you can reflect in between and then understand through that difference. If you just imagine pure unity is the universe, then by definition there is zero understanding possible in that worldview. You know, and there have certainly been humans that have attempted to live that worldview, where they imagine that everything, that there is no separation or anything, everything is a perfect unity. And then they wonder why they have a hard time living their life. It's because by definition they've eliminated all understanding from their mind. When they do that, there's no understanding possible unless there's separation. You have to, in order to understand the Father and the Son, you have to separate them. If you hold them together, you understand neither. You have to separate them. You know, remember, I even kind of point that out when they're giving you a description from an individuality viewpoint, that don't even call it the Universal Father until there's an Eternal Son, until they're actually separated. Is until they're separated, I mean, neither of those designations mean anything. It can't be a son if there's not a father. It can't be a father if there's not a son. See, you know, and that's just one aspect of understanding. You could also understand them as the universal creator and the co-creator, or the universal creator and the coordinate creator, or, you know, et cetera, et cetera. All these different ways that you could understand a difference. And then through that difference, the individuals. Think of your mind. Your mind is fundamentally an associative phenomenon. It has to engage in associativity first. And then it can strive to understand the endpoints that are would be prerequisites for such an association. But it has to start with the association. And in that mode... Look what they were just stressing. As regards the policies, conduct, and administration of the local universe, the Universal Father acts in the person of his greater Son. In the interrelationships of the sons of God, in the group associations of the personalities of origin in the third source and center, or in the relationship between any other creatures, such as human beings. As concerns such associations, the Universal Father never intervenes. Okay, and they said the same thing in the previous paragraph, where they said, God retires from activity in favor of the galaxy of creature and creator personalities who inherently intervene between himself and any given universe situation or creative event. So can you have a direct, nothing in between relationship between you and the Universal Father? No. There has to be something intervening. As he said, they say point blank, there's always something intervening. Because he is not associativity. He has no relationship with associativity at all. Not even the associativity of the personality circuit. That would be a violation of their statement. Yeah, they've got inherently intervene, never, you know, et cetera. Okay? Well, I was always just thinking of a magical circuit going across the void between me and the Universal Father. But there isn't any voids. That's illogical. It's like there's no vacuum in physics. And there's the force charge of space. It intervenes. It fills space. What fills the space between that volitional absolute end of the personality circuit and me. You know, if there's this circuit that's linking me, what is the conductor through which that circuit of volition flows?
Infinite spirit?
No.
Mother spirit?
We're talking, it's a conductor, not a person. Okay, it's a conductor. Think of a thing. Okay, is it spirit? Is it mind? Is it matter? What's the conductor? Is it copper? What could conduct volition?
Personality?
No, that's not a thing. Remember I told you there's four possible conductors. Yes. We have spirit circuits and mind circuits and material circuits, okay? Those three energy, but there's another type of circuit, a personality circuit. How can volition flow through some conductor? What is the conductor? What intervenes? Deity. Okay, and we even know specifically what deity. Okay? Mother type deity. The stuff that's inside here that can connect me inside to the universal father that's outside. The volitional absolute that's the other end of that circuit. Okay? He cannot get in, you know, he cannot, he has no relationship to the association of me to him. He relates to me only as an individual. He has not the association to me as an individual. Someone else, he's delegated that part to someone else, the association part. The only thing he can't delegate is the individuality. But he's delegated all of the associativity.
That gives me comfort to know. Yeah.
Right. You know, it's through her that you reach him. And it's through her that he reaches you. He cannot reach you except through her. He has no relationship to the association to you. And just, you know, so you're, like I said, you're immersed. And this deity... is literally conducting volition. I mean, talk about something, talking about a substance, quote unquote, that's dynamic and alive. This distinction is vital. Living, right? Vital. This distinction is vital. For in a cosmic system, the individual members are not connected with each other except in relationship to the whole, which is deity, the Paradise Trinity. And through the individuality of the whole, which is deity, the mother. Deity is what connects, okay? Makes it a cosmic system.
But remember, before I go on, about the individuality that he sees us as, as nobody else ever sees us. I think that's what gives me comfort.
Yeah, and you're going to stress that in the next paragraph here. You see, that's they're coming to the point here. See, so that you can really have a definitive, new, uncluttered relationship in your mind to the Father. Because there's a lot of things that intervene. If you want a pure relationship to the Father, you need to recognize what intervenes and not ball that up into it. Don't gum up the relationship to, you know, to the Father. If you're seeking that particular relationship, you need to purify it of other things that always intervene, you know, so that you know the Father finally. For instance, one thing that could intervene is the Almighty. And no wonder primitive people end up calling God the Almighty. Because, you know, they reach into the fog of deity and that's all they find. They don't make it to the Father. You got to go all the way through that. The various things, see, that you could think was the Father. It's not. The Father's not the Almighty. That's one facet of God the Supreme. Okay. See, those sorts of things. That's what they're trying to get at. They're trying to get you to, in order to actually understand your relationship to the Father, a relationship that I know everyone in this room desires, you have to differentiate the Father from the other things. You want to relate to the real Father, not your false fog of the Father. Okay, so so this stress, the law of the Creator Son, the ruling, et cetera, going down the hierarchy of the sons, the descending sons, and we know that it starts with deity with the Creator Son, but it immediately go to the constellation Father's down. It's not deity anymore. It's not personalized deity anymore. There's divinity, and you get down to the Lenon Index with the system sovereigns and the planetary princes, and it's divinity that is reversible because of ignorance in terms of its, at the first divine nature. But nonetheless, what Lucifer did prevailed. He never intervened. He would never intervene in what Lucifer was doing. And it's actually even seems stronger than that. He can't. He doesn't have the ability to intervene. He delegated that. He has no associative, linkage. Okay. Now there is things with the individual, and we're getting to that. But just see how he trusts the whole. He doesn't poke into it. Because the whole, or even the associations in individuality, are inadequate. They're going to point, that sometimes, we speak of him intervening. So it's like, what exactly is the character of that? Should I be looking for the Father to help me with my relationship? No, he has no relationship to relationship. And so that's the next thing they bring out here in the next paragraph.
Creator Son rules supreme in all matters of ethical associations. The relations of any division of creatures to any other class of creatures or of two or more individuals within any given group. But such a plan does not mean that the Universal Father may not in his own way intervene and do aught that pleases the divine mind with any individual creature throughout all creation as pertains to that individual's present status or future prospects, and as concerns the Father's eternal plan and infinite purpose.
So, one thing at a time. First part about, who exactly is in charge of the associations then, if it's not the Father? Okay. It's the Creator's Son. Okay? Or two or more, then the Father is not there. The Eternal Son is, or the Creator's Son is there. Where there's any two or more. Only the Creator Son is there, not the Father. And how did Jesus express that when he was here? Well, no, he didn't actually say quite that. What he did, I'm about to tell you. Because it's just like the fifth ethical revelation, where if there's some human that has adequately expressed something, that's what you have here. Jesus was doing the same thing. Rather than making his own sentence, he said, well, there was a Hindu long ago who said, where two or three are gathered, there am I in the midst. And so that's what he said. Technically it's two or more, but it was close enough. So he said it the way that Hindu said it, rather than not taking it up a notch. Jesus just said, where two or three are gathered. But he's relating this. See, and if you initially think of interpreting that with the Father, that there am I, the Universal Father, no. See, that's not, and that's why it's always been interpreted, of course, in the Bible, but no, they're telling you, no, that's not correct. The Father is not in the midst of that association or that system, if it's three or more. The Creator Son only is. The Father cannot relate to a relationship or a system. This distinction is vital, for in a cosmic system, right? So the whole and the individuality, the whole can't be the Father. We know that. It's the Paradise Trinity and the Mother, right? See, it's not the Father because he can't be the Father. He doesn't have a relationship to a system. He only has a relationship to individuals. Now, you notice here in the second half of this, they say, but such a plan does not mean that the universal Father, so now they said the whole thing, a very personal designation. The universal Father may not in his own way intervene and do aught that pleases the divine mind with any individual creature. Okay, so if this intervention is as the universal Father, in other words, if it's a personal intervention like that, how is it accomplished? Does anyone remember?
From a thought adjuster?
No, that's not a person.
That's pretty personal.
That can't be that. Yeah, personalized adjuster. That's how that is done, what they're describing there. Let me just remind you, if you want for reference, let's see, what paper is this? This is paper 109, section 7, on when they're talking about the personalized adjusters. They remind you of this specific issue. They, the personalized adjusters, are the exclusive beings of the universes who embrace within their being all the known relationships of personality. They are omnipersonal. They are before personality, they are personality, and they are after personality. They minister the personality of the universal Father. This is what we're talking about. They minister the personality of the universal Father as in the eternal past, the eternal present, and the eternal future. Because again, God, the universal Father can't directly do it. If he stuck himself in here, you know, then there wouldn't be an in here. He'd swallow it all up. All there would be is God the Infinite. But he, as the first source and center, is omnipersonal. This personality, quote unquote, is at the co-infinite level. It's omnipersonal. So this personally, you know, intervening, quote unquote, is not at eye level. It's as transcendent of eye level as you can get, all the way up to co-infinite. He intervenes omnipersonally. And so they're reminding you, when he acts personally, it's not in time. He acts in the fullness of the eternal past, the eternal present, and the eternal future simultaneously. Okay, and they reminded you of that, you know, back here in paper 32 where we just read. You know, how did they describe that? You know, where they said that you know, that he engages as an individual, but then what do they say? As pertains to that individual's present status or future prospects, kind of hinting, but then it gets even more direct. And as concerns the Father's eternal plan and infinite purpose. Okay? Because that's the only way he can act. He can't act, you know, relative to some finite purpose or some, you know, temporal plan. There's no relationship to such things. Okay? So if he engages an individual, technically, the individual that he's engaging is the eternal lighter, is the being that's in eternity and infinity, you know, the cosmos infinite. That being is what he's, because that's the being that's at eye level, basically. You know, and you've got this amazing thing then to ponder. See, the direct act is clear up there, the co-infinite level. And that comes down, you know, into now and here, again, through the Mother, right? See, how can this personalized adjuster actually, you know, do this personal ministration for the universal Father again, there's got to be an associative thing that's linking. And it's and you can really see how it's very important for the mother to have this vertical ubiquity so that this act can come down. You know, and have manifestation, you know, localized in time and space. But it's not the father that self-localized it like that. You know, it's this downstepping process that brought it into localization in time and space. He delegated that. He's trusting someone to bring his act down precisely as it ought to be. Again, because he can't do that. So all these things here in play, you give up an anthropomorphic guy with a beard that can stand there and say hi to you, and what you get in the, you know, substituted is this incredible, amazing system of deity and connectivity. And ubiquity that humans have never imagined.
Makes so much more sense.
Right, and it's so, if you just have that point of view, it's so hard to ever again think of yourself as somehow forgotten, alone, disconnected. I mean, there's conductivity of every sort, you know, in play all the time, all around you, within you, through you, above you, beyond you, everything. Okay. That's what the universe looks like from the top-down point of view, from the unity viewpoint. Not an individuality viewpoint and a grasping belief in magical connectivity, which will fail you in that foxhole, you know, that is our benighted sphere. Yeah. You need the strength.
When the first source and center, when he created the universe, he creates the universal Father and the eternal Son and the Spirit. But that, from that, is where for a deity, he has to create deity as well.
No, see,
that's,
I mean,
what I look at.
Well, yeah, but you're mixing individuality and unity viewpoints. See, deity. I mean, you see, this is the thing. You don't.
First source and center. I'm not saying it's the universal
Father. I know, but. But even to say that, see, is to take a measure of individuality viewpoint. You know, in the highest sense of the individuality viewpoint, the seven absolutes of infinity, you call them the first source and center, the second source and center, the third source and center. Those are individuals, see. Now, for ease of understanding and relationship between the unity and the individuality viewpoints, they use the same designations for facets of deity that they do for some of the individuality designations. Like sometimes you call that first person directly the universal father. But technically that's not the name of an individual. That's the name of one of the six facets of the deity of the father. And it's that particular facet of deity that's called the universal father that is being reflected in an individuality viewpoint as the person, you know, with a hand that bestows, for instance. But really, see, you, when you talk about deity, you have to let go of that individuality viewpoint creative sequence where you have the first source and center gives rise to the second and the paradise sources and centers. See, that's not in play anymore. In the unity viewpoint, you have a whole different creation story. It still starts with in the beginning, in the conceptual beginning was the I am, but the next sentence is different. That's all, you know, and when we go through total deity in the total deity seminar, we develop that other, that top-down point of view creation story. How does all of the multiplicity of the facets of deity come into existence? And it's a different story, much more complicated story. It's why, you know, they didn't try to teach it to you initially. They just suggested everything you need so that when you're ready, you can tell that story from the top-down point of view. Okay, so, you know, but just really now, you know, you have a spiritual father and a cosmic mother. you have a mother that is related to the system, and a father that just is connected to each of the individuals, and like you were reminding us, absolutely. You can't connect to two individuals, you know, I don't know how you want to say, with the same hand or whatever analogy you want to use, you know, or you can't see two individuals with the same eye. I mean, when he looks or when he, you know, when he reaches, it's an absolute look, an absolute reach. So when he looks or reaches to Nick, all that's in the entire infinity of that field of view is Nick. Nothing else. He has an absolute relationship to Nick, and an absolute relationship to Andre, and an absolute relationship to Pam, where he loves you, he engages you as if you're the only person in the universe, because that's what it means to have an absolute relationship. If he engaged you as if there's others, then that's not an absolute love. That's a relative love. No, I love you only the amount that I can also love others at the same time. Nothing like that. He can love each of us absolutely because he's infinite. He can love an infinite number of individuals absolutely because he's infinite. All right, so the love is there, but to just, you know, that linkage is there, that immediacy is technically there, but, you know, he's getting to you through the deity that's inside. He doesn't come inside. He stays outside. He doesn't have to come inside. What is conducted through that conductor of deity is perfectly conveyed. There's no friction. There's no resistance. There's no loss. Okay? You know, it's a superconductor, that deity. Okay? So it's as if he were right in front of you. But technically, he's not. Yep.
Okay, just to be clear, so the Universal Father stands on the Isle of Paradise and he does not move.
Right.
So I've got that concept perfect.
Yep.
And through every one of everything is those automatons. Now, to me, this automaton is like, and I don't even know.
You're jumping ahead, though. We're going to get to that. We're going to get to the automaton thing.
I know.
You know, it's coming up.
But I was just going to say, okay, it's hard for me to understand exactly what an automaton is. So the way I look at okay, what it must be.
Yeah.
Is this thing, this little tiny thing that connects everybody. It's everywhere, the air, the curtain, everywhere. And that's what...
Well, let's see if we can improve that. Let's see if we can improve that. When we get to that spot, it's coming up.
But that's how he can be in each of us.
We'll try to get the automaton out of the way. Right, but we'll try to... You know, you're putting too much of the automaton in between you and the Father.
Oh, I am.
So let's see if we can get the connection more direct, and you'll see that they actually refer to that. Okay, it's okay. I mean, we talked about that before, but here we'll try to improve upon that recognition here. All right, let's get a little bit more here.
In the mortal will creatures, the Father is actually present in the indwelling adjuster, a fragment of his pre-personal spirit, and the Father is also the source of the personality of such a mortal will creature.
Okay, so see, that little is kind of a parenthetical, almost like a little paragraph there. See, remember, we just figured out when it's the Universal Father directly engaging, it's via personalized adjusters. You know, they are the personal ministry of the Father made present. Notice in this paragraph, does it say the Universal Father? No, it says the Father in the first clause, and it says the Father in the second clause. This is not personal linkage here, technically. This is the deity linkage. You know, very immediately understandable when you're talking about a pre-personal adjuster, that fragment of deity. You know, that's a fragment of the Father, just the deity, not the person. You know, and then when they say, and the Father is also the source of the personality of such a mortal will creature. You know, again, thinking in terms of this linkage, of that personality circuit, you know, and, you know, the act of that personality, even before there's a circuit, that personality somehow getting to you, you know, to identify with yourself, you know, that's got to go between the divide somehow. How is it conducted from there to here? Okay. See, that whole, again, that is that associativity, what intervenes is deity. See, so technically on the other end, you know, what immediately interfaces has to be deity. It's deity engaging deity, and in it comes. See, so the Father. But now from a individuality viewpoint, you can think of that hand it's bestowing as the universal Father. But if you're not going to be so anthropomorphic, you know, and actually having this individual, the big long hand reaching out and bestowing, you know, if you're going to bring in the deity picture, see, then, you know, there's a deity interface on the outside. You know, it goes from the Father deity and through the Mother deity into you. Again, like they're stressing, technically how this is all happening is via deity. That's how why there isn't any magic. It's because there's an actual substance that allows for this, you know, bridging these divides. Deity is the mystery that logical questioning has been seeking for throughout all of human history, to connect things together. Okay, so just notice, these are very precise. When they wanted you to think about the personal, they said the universal Father. When they're hoping that you notice that they, you know, from a deity perspective, they just say the Father. They're not synonyms. Right? The Father is just the deity, not the person. Okay.
These thought adjusters, the bestowals of the universal Father, are comparatively isolated. They indwell human minds but have no discernible connection with the ethical affairs of a local creation. They are not directly coordinated with the seraphic service, nor with the administration of systems, constellations, or a local universe, not even with the rule of a creator son, whose will is the supreme law of his universe.
Again, just stressing. So even when, you know, you have that spirit fragment in there, you know, as a spirit representation of the Father, it's just to an individual. Doesn't have even the slightest relationship to even the associative or systematic doings of the Creator Son. Okay, purely individual. You know, and when you see it that way, and then you know, if you appreciate when the revelators tell you, we watch things play out, and we see this amazing symphony before our eyes, and we know that there's no overt conductor of that symphony. Who keeps all of the instruments together? You know, how does a seraphim, you know, a guardian seraphim and a thought adjuster seamlessly play together in that symphony when there's no conductor? You know, again, the answer is because ultimately it's all one deity. That this is all happening within. It can't be out of sync. The deity that's ubiquitous keeps it all together in a universal harmony. Okay? You know, you're consecrating your mind to the universal harmony, the divinity of that ubiquitous deity within. You know, when everything consecrates itself to that, the whole universe sings together as one, plays together as one. And so that's the key. The deity is the key. It's the coordination of, you know, of everything we experience. And that's why we always point out when they say coordinate, you know, usually it's the Mother directly. Sometimes it might be a little more abstract. It might be the Paradise Trinity, you know, the source of the Mother. But see, it's that. It's the whole and the individuality of the whole. That's why there's a coordination. It's not because of magical micromanagement, like humans have always thought, that's why the universe was so cool, because there's this incredible magical micromanagement by God, the Father. So, no, it's not the way it works. It's because everyone puts themselves in cooperative subordination to the whole as individuals, And so the whole guarantees that all plays together as one. That's the way it works. All right. You know, and she, you know, notice they even said that they are not directly coordinated. So there they're pointing out, you know, they know about this coordination thing, but they can't see it at a sort of a low level of mother coordination. You know, remember, there's a mystery of mysteries in play here. This is being coordinated at a very high level and gets downstepped in.
Okay. Sounds like she's a respecter of persons.
Well, you know, you can also say that she's not a respecter of a person, but only in the reciprocal sense. She engages every single person simultaneously, equally. Okay. You know, because she can't individuate. She can't relate to just you. She relates to every one of them simultaneously. So obviously, she engages us all equally.
The indwelling adjusters are one of God's separate but unified modes of contact with the creatures of his all but infinite creation. Thus does he who is invisible to mortal man manifest his presence, and could he do so, he would show himself to us in still other ways, but such further revelation is not divinely possible.
So, is it true that with God all things are possible? No. Now, not if by God you mean the Universal Father. There's all kinds of things that he cannot do, even with all of his infinity and absoluteness. Right? And they're just reminding you of that. Okay? It's not that he doesn't. He can't. But such further revelation is not divinely possible. Now, of course, the kind of key there is, you know, they threw the divinely in there. In other words, it would be a violation of his own nature. It would be a violation of law. You know, he can't mock himself. You know, he's in conformity to the law that he is. God is law. Okay, you know, and also that law is love. And so you can see the divinely. Okay, but that's what they're getting at there. You know, it just is. That would be a square circle, and he can't do it, can't make it. You know, so again, see, notice how gently here, you know, in terms of what's literally in front of you, they're challenging sort of all these little nuggets that If you grew up in relationship to the Bible, you know, you definitely remember. You know, you heard them repeated over and over again, with God all things are possible. And they're going, well, not quite. because there's no magic. And an awful lot, you know, and that's the especially problematic thing. Most of what people are thinking of when they repeat that is magical notions. Sure. You know, and basically, you know what the Revelers are saying, everything that you thought God can do, he can't. He can't, doesn't do anything that you thought he did. And so it's like, whoa, I'm going to have to like start all over again. Yes, you are. That's the whole point. Start from scratch. Behold, all things are becoming new, including every single thing you ever knew about God. Every single thing is going to be totally made new.
If you're looking for where the all is, that's where all things are possible.
Right. I mean, sure, in the totality of deity and reality, by definition, all things are possible, because that's all that's possible. That's what you mean by that. But when you're talking about just a part is a part. It's not the whole. Okay. So let's see, what else do we have there? You know, and again, when you noticed how they, you know, the bestowals of the Universal Father in that previous paragraph, The indwelling adjusters are one of God's separate... I mean, you should begin to see that in more complex terms. I mean, technically, God the Father is relating to your adjuster as deity to fragment of deity. I mean, that's the direct interface. And there's a person behind that deity engagement. You know, it when you're on the Isle of Paradise and you're seeking to find the three persons personally, see, this is where it really becomes directly in front of you, what we're talking about. In order to get to a recognition of them personally, you have to go through the deity to the person. Because that's really that's the hand that's put forward by the deities. You know, they reach out as deity, especially when you're talking about, you know, these infinite facts where we don't want to have, you know, a infinite personality wrapping itself around everything. I mean, obviously, that such an encompassing potential needs to stay buffered from immediate contact to things, you know. And so deity is, you know, is put forward. And so, right, it's through the deity you penetrate. You learn how to have enough of a relationship to the unity that is that deity, that within it, through it, you've experienced the person. Okay. All right, so you can just see that same fact of what happens on the aisle is they're just reminding you that as above, so below. That's technically you know, what's going on, is the deity is engaging this adjuster. All right.
We can see and understand the mechanism whereby the sons enjoy intimate and complete knowledge regarding the universes of their jurisdiction, but we cannot fully comprehend the methods whereby God is so fully and personally conversant with the details of the universe of universes, although we at least can recognize the avenue whereby the Universal Father can receive information regarding and manifest his presence to the beings of his immense creation. Through the personality circuit, the Father is cognizant, has personal knowledge of all the thoughts and acts of all the beings in all the systems of all the universes of all creation.
How many alls did you count?
All of them. In other words, there must be an omni.
Okay, though we cannot fully grasp this technique of God's communion with his children, we can be strengthened in the assurance that the Lord knows his children, and that of each one of us, he takes note where we were born.
Okay, so now here's where they're, you know, they're being a little technical, and they're even doing some clever use of, you know, of quotations here to get you to think about this. Okay, so notice how they start out. You know, we can see and understand the mechanism, okay, whereby the sons enjoy intimate and complete knowledge. Okay, why is that so, you know, engageable and analyzable and understandable? Because it's all out front. It's all about matter, mind, spirit, those three energies, and that whole system. They can directly see that, measure it, you know, engage. It's all up front. That's all happening, going out the front door, and reaching out to, you know, to wherever it's going. But when they say that we cannot fully comprehend the methods whereby God is so fully and personally conversant, you know, when you're thinking about the Universal Father. Okay, it doesn't happen. You know, they're saying this doesn't happen this way. It doesn't happen there. It's kind of, you know, overtly manifest where we can see it and measure it and understand it directly. Now they say, you know, that we at least can recognize the avenue. Okay, well, we were just talking about that. We've recognized the avenue. The avenue is Mother Deity. I mean, but they can't measure that, engage that. They know it's there. They know that's the avenue, but it's not overt. It's the back doorway. Okay. I mean, you know, to just kind of make it a little bit straightforward to think about. Think about, okay, God is spirit. You know, you start with that. So here my left hand, there it is. There's that fact. God is spirit, and he wants to get to me, who is not spirit. I'm a material self. So it's got to go from spirit to matter. Okay, and what they're talking about, okay, if it happens through mind, if you go from spirit through mind to matter, that's all out front and can be observed. He's going out the front door through mind to matter. Okay? That's not how it happens. It goes out the back door, goes around this way and gets to my right hand. What is that? You know, what connects spirit to matter through the back door? Deity. Okay, that's the route. Okay? I mean, in a higher sense, see, instead of going from the first center out through the Son and the Spirit, out through the absolute Spirit, through the absolute mind to engage, you know, that's the front door. He goes out the back door through the Paradise Trinity, the other side of the first center, through the Paradise Trinity and the Mother. See, that's the back door route. See, in the Trinity, is the one facet of deity that engages the triunity of matter, mind, and spirit. So in that, the wholeness of the triunity, it can, you know, he can get to the matter in that wholeness. The deity relates to it as a whole, and it can get through the back door that way. Okay, so but it's you know, invisible essentially, see, to any sort of measuring device that measures energies. You know, even when you can measure all of these other kind, you know, mind energy, spirit energy, and all this sort of stuff, you know, that they can, you know, all the way down to the ultimatonic level and on, all, you know, they can measure energy of every shape and form, but this is not any of that stuff. It's the other way around. Okay? And they refer to that as this clever little choice of quotes. So they say two things. The Lord knows his children, and that each one of us, he takes note where we were born. Not when we were born, because that's impossible. He can't take note of when we were born. That's a temporal thing. But he takes note of where we were born. He purposely chose that one because there's two ways that you can think of how he knows you, quote unquote. The first one is in the sense, you know, when they started out, we can see and understand the mechanisms whereby the sons enjoy intimate and complete knowledge regarding, okay? So in that direct sense, the Lord knows his children, that knowledge again, okay? That's what we were just talking about. That was that deity connection through the mother, okay? But what about this where thing? What are they referring to there? That's what Pam was bringing up just a little bit ago. And she was mentioning ultimatons. Okay? I've referred to this a few times in the past. Okay? There is another avenue that he has open to him. It's not a, you know, a personal or personal-like avenue that we're talking about when we're talking about the Paradise Trinity and the Mother, so that you would, you know, literally kind of use the word know, you know, which connotes personal reflective consciousness, sort of, you know, but takes note to this kind of more technical thing. This quote works really well. There in Paradise, there's two things that have that adjective. We've talked about the one, the Paradise Trinity. What's the other one? The Paradise Isle. Impersonally, one of the facets of the Father is the universal controller. One of the facets of deity that is the Father is the universal controller. And the universal controller, which, you know, if you think of in individual terms, you know, so that you can kind of think about this sort of acting and engaging, You know, so if you think about the first person center impersonally, so not as the universal father, but as the universal controller engages the Isle of Paradise, the Paradise Isle. And the Paradise Isle is at this geographic center of the cosmos infinite. It's the origin of the coordinate system of all the wares in the cosmos infinite. Okay? And from our perspective, and directly what Pam was referring to, remembering me talking about, the Isle of Paradise also that geographic centerness, you know, in a very literal sense, when you're thinking of the cosmos infinite way up at that high plane, that gets downstepped. That fact that the isle is literally as an isle, you know, with, you know, area and everything, you know, in this infinite cosmos, you know, extending out from it, you downstep that into the finite, that relationship. And what does it look like down here in the finite? It looks like the isle acting as a centering influence. It's not a literal center, because an absolute thing can't be literally in the finite, okay? But you can downstep its centering influence as a reflection of the fact that it literally is a center in the cosmos infinite. When you downstep that, it acts as a centering influence and an infinitely functioning centering influence. It can be a centering influence right at the tip of my finger here and tip of my finger here and the tip of my finger here and here and here and an infinite number of points, because it literally can be the center of a cosmos infinite. So when you downstep into the finite, it can be a centering influence for every infinite number of points, imaginary points. And so when you have a thing, this unit of motion, this ultimate unit of motion, this automaton, when you have a thing, no matter where it is, it experiences that centering influence. And so if you probe that thing, you will discover it to relate to you as if it was a sphere, as if it had been centered upon itself. Because no matter where it is, there's a centering influence that doesn't allow it to be football-shaped or a plane or whatever. There's a centering, a three-dimensional centering influence of the isle at every point. And so automatons manifest finitely as spheres of influence. They're centered upon the centering influence of the isle. Okay, take the automatons away. Let's not talk about physics. Let's talk about me and how he can take note where I was born. Now, obviously, again, from his perspective, the where am I in the cosmos infinite, in eternity? But that is a downstepped expression. See, he can know all the wheres in the finite as the impersonal universal controller through the aisle. If he goes through the aisle, where does his hand come out? At every point. He's feeling this where and 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 this where. He's not literally in, but he's right on the boundary of being in. So that if anything is there, he feels it, you know, something touching the boundary between the outside and the inside. But, you know, he can't actually go inside, you know, but that's okay. See, if he touches the aisle's not actually inside. The aisle is just touching the skin, you know, of the finite. You know, it's at the zero point of every location. Impersonally, you know, as the universal controller, that's how he's doing that second phrase. So there's two ways, you know, and I've referred to this before, because if you want to kind of have a kind of immediate way to understand how he can locate you to bestow personality upon you, I mean, that's how. But of course, you know, don't think about it. Don't bring him into the, don't bring his hand into the finite. You know, he's locating you actually in the cosmos infinite, and that gets downstepped, and your personality engages you in a finite time in a finite location. Wow, that's a mystery of mysteries. Yeah, that's what they call it, right? See, that's the mystery of mysteries, that he actually is engaging it clear up there, you know, in eternity and in infinity, but it manifests down in the finite as a as an identification, you know, completely understandable. See, it's the mystery of mysteries, but it happens. And it happens because if it links there, it must come down, because there's nothing to prevent that, that can keep it from coming down, because there's a continuum of deity all the way down that brings it down, and it will manifest. Again, it's the mother. Through the mother, that vestal is manifest in space and time, because mother deity can be in space and time. So it can be right co-located with you. And so that's it's very clever what they're doing there. See, they're getting, if you, once you begin to understand the deity in these details, you can see what they're doing there. They're pointing out that there's two ways. A personal way, basically, and an impersonal way, that you are engaged by the Father. But in both cases, it's not direct. It's through the mother. And that association is perfect.
Do they have to have two ways, or do they need two ways because of existential and evolution?
Basically, there has to be two ways because there's an upper surface of the aisle and a nether surface of the aisle. And they both act simultaneously. And so you're touched in two ways. That's, you know, one... You know, one is basically touching you in a time-like, and it's more technically motion, you know, but time-like fashion. You know, you're thinking going from eternity into time. That's the upper surface one. The other one is, you know, see where? See, it's a spatially. Like you're saying, the aisle being this geographic, see, a thing that gives him a relationship to things spatially. But in this a very amazingly mysterious, transcendent, downstepping way, but nonetheless perfectly, you know, the personality never misses its mark and gets, you know, bestowed on a dirt clod instead of you, okay? That bestowal is conducted perfectly down to its intended destination by the hand of the mother. All right, a little bit more.
In your universe and in your heart, the Universal Father is present, spiritually speaking, by one of the seven master spirits of central abode, and specifically by the divine adjuster who lives and works and waits in the depths of the mortal mind.
Do you notice these little paragraphs? Because they want you to pause. So the second part is, okay, didn't they already say that? But now they're giving you another little twist. They're reminding you, you know, if you're going to bestow this adjuster... You have to be given the capacity for that first. There has to be a place for the adjuster to go. In your universe and in your heart, okay, you know, the temple within, the upper domain of the hourglass, your heart, the core of your being, of your mindful self, you know, what does it say? Present, spiritually speaking, by one of the seven master spirits, central abode. Of central abode, well, that's like, oh, that's right. I've got a little downstepped expression from the infinite spirit through a particular master spirit, right, to me, the creative mother spirit. Who's the one that actually makes that heart, that temple within, that place?
The place is the mother.
The place is made by the mother. You know, when she encircuits you in the Holy Spirit, like we said, you know, when you think of it, you can think of it very literally, that there's those three cosmic intuitions in that encirclement, and you can think of that literally making three floors. If I'm going to have three floors, three levels, three cosmic levels within me. You know, I've just created a volume. I mean, that's a space. There's a capacity in the heart of your being. See, so again, the Father doesn't directly make that temple. He's delegated that to the Infinite Spirit, to the Master Spirit, to the Creative Mother Spirit, to you. But certainly, if you're thinking of from an individuality viewpoint, you know, there's a first source center. So you're thinking of him as the initiator of the whole process. But again, see, the Father's just the initiator. See, you're getting him correctly placed at just the initiation step. He initiates that process of establishing a temple within you. He doesn't do it himself. He just initiates the process. Those who, to whom he's delegated that, do that. And again, obviously he has to delegate that. For you to have a temple within, it has to be some sort of a finite temple within. You're going to need a finite hand to make a finite temple for you. I mean, only kind of temple he could make would be an infinite one. That's too big for me. Okay, I just need a little finite temple. So I need a finite hand. The Creative Mother Spirit is a finite hand that can make a finite temple, just your size. Okay. See, so he had to delegate that. Smaller hands have to do that job. He has great big infinite hands. He can't do delicate work like that. Okay? All right.
God is not a self-centered personality. The Father freely distributes himself to his creation and to his creatures. He lives and acts not only in the deities, but also in his sons, whom he entrusts with the doing of everything that is divinely possible for them to do. The Universal Father has truly divested himself of every function which it is possible for another being to perform. And this is just as true of mortal man as of the Creator's Son, who rules in God's stead at the headquarters of a local universe. Thus we behold the outworking of the ideal and infinite love of the Universal Father.
Okay, that's how that love works out, manifest. Okay, and you notice how, you know, he lives and acts not only in the deities. You know, so again, they're just stressing, you know, they're kind of giving you an epilogue summary here. So you've got that way of understanding it. It's through deity. And if you want to think about personally, it's not direct, but figuratively, you know, it's through the sons. So you have the non-personal deity engagement, and then you have, you know, figuratively, the personal engagement, you know, on an ongoing basis. I'm not counting the special thing of personalized adjusters, you know, stepping in. But, you know, on an ongoing basis, the personally is, you know, is in the hands of the sons. So there's those two ways that, you know, that's how he's delegated. He doesn't do either of those directly. I mean, it's not his deity, right? You know, it's through other deity that that connection is made. And then, as he's truly divested himself of every function which it is possible for another being to perform. You know, and this is just as true of mortal man, right? He's divested himself of certain things and given them to you. There's some things that only you can do. With God, not all things are possible. Maybe immediately of personal interest to you is the things that he gave you, and because he gave them to you, he can't do those things. It's now impossible for him to do those things because he gave that possibility to you. What is that one thing, you know, very obvious that he gave to you, that he gave you that, you know, potential to choose eternity? Right, but to choose eternity with it, okay? Only you can connect yourself to eternity. He cannot do it. He divested himself of that. He gave it wholly to you. He can't help you one iota with that choice. He has no ability to do that choice for you. He divested himself of that. Only you can choose eternity and infinity.
You're sovereign.
You're a sovereign there. Okay? You have an absolute dimension of your personality, and that's, you know, most immediately understandable what it's for, is to be able to make that choice, that absolute choice. And if you choose no, if you choose oblivion instead of eternity, is there anything at all that he can do? No. He divested himself of every shred of that. There's absolutely nothing he can do. He cannot save you from that choice. You can overrule the universal Father in that one area. He wants desperately to link that, but he can't do it because he gave it away. He doesn't want it back. He gave it to you. And so, you know, see, you know, that's why they stress that, you know, don't just go off, you know, thinking about, oh, Creator Son's doing this, that. No, 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 there's some things that are given directly to you, and only you can do it. That just, you know, to take in that directly, and now do you have the humility to not let such thoughts go to your head? The literal fact that you can trump the Father in that area. You can look an infinite, absolute being in the eye and say, no, I don't care what you want. I want otherwise.
What, like a two-year-old?
Well, when you read about Lucifer, does it sound like a two-year-old?
Yeah, it does.
Yes, it does. See, all right. That's the sad thing. I mean, it's someone who was, who at the start was divine because it's a direct offspring of deity, turns himself into an immature two-year-old and says no. I mean, how pitiful is that? Right. I mean, in a relativity perspective, me saying no is nowhere near as pitiful as that. I mean, that's just really pitiful. That someone who's given so much, you know, can't see it, you know, and gives it up. You had something you want to throw in there?
I was just going to say it wouldn't mean anything. To say yes wouldn't mean a thing if you couldn't say no.
All right, again, so that's the whole point, you know. It's a genuine yes, no. It's your choice. You know, but to think about it, you know, in this literal sense, like they're trying to get you to, you know, we've always thought of it as a choice, but to think of it in this distribution mode, this divesting, you know, obviously, you know, if you think about in the beginning, you know, all you had was a first source and center and everything was resident there, you know, to literally picture that being doled out and it can never come back, you put it out there and now it's that which used to be at the center of everything is now in you, and only you can do that. Now, obviously, the more we get connected into the cosmic system, you know, and can begin to manifest more of our personality, relative to that cosmic system, there's other things that we begin to discover that, you know, where our uniqueness fits in, and how, well, I'll be darned, I'm the only one that can do that. Those paradise citizens are going, and they point at me, and I do it. How cool is that? You know, see, eventually, you know, it'll go beyond just this, you know, but, you know, to really appreciate it immediately in that divesting mode, you know, that's the thing that is obviously like the Father himself, to be able to choose or reject eternity and infinity. To choose to wrap yourself around the infinite eternal ellipse or not. Okay. That's father-like stuff. He's wrapped around the infinite eternal ellipse. The Father's circuit around the ellipse. See, you're doing father stuff there.
It's kind of like we give birth to a child and we can't take it back. I mean, once we've given birth, they're there. They're
there. Yes. No, I mean, that's, you know, and of course, then you just recognize what you're actually ultimately doing there. You're giving birth to children of the Father. See, so you're part of the divesting process. Through you, he divests himself of that individual. and it doesn't take it back. Can't take it back. All these things, you begin to see them like this. And then, you know, and then just to, like you've heard me bring out a few times, to just remember that all of these sorts of processes are handy, are coming to fruition through the mother. You know, things like the incarnation and bestowal of adjusters and all these very mysterious things. It's all through this unexaminable, even by high beings, mysterious phenomenon of ubiquitous deity within, that all these, that there's these conduits for things to happen there. You can't observe them, you know, going from point A to point B and stuff. You know, that's, you know, that all of this, that, you know, that the mystery of exactly what DNA comes to be in a particular individual and how, not coincidentally, a certain personality identifies with that. From a temporal point of view, spatial point of view, it seems it has to be completely coincidentally, but no, there are no coincidences. Even in supremacy, you don't have to go all the way to eternity. Just to get to supremacy, you'll go, ah, okay, I get it. You know, you'll see the trivially obvious power personality synthesis that's there at the end when you're a seven-stage spirit that very sneakily snuck in all the way from the beginning, you know? Okay.
In this universal bestowal of himself, we have abundant proof of both the magnitude and the magnanimity of the Father's divine nature. If God had withheld aught of himself from the universal creation, then of that residue he is in lavish generosity bestowing the thought adjusters upon the mortals of the realms, the mystery monitors of time, who so patiently indwell the mortal candidates for life everlasting.
Oh, did we remind you that they patiently indwell? while they're imprisoned? No, don't go on yet. Yeah, just that subtle little thing about reminding you of their imprisonment and their patience. But the other thing that's happening there, notice this, or let's see if we can notice the subtle little thing they're doing there. So look at the picture they're painting there. So they're giving you a little bit of a virtual sequence of events here. They want you to reflect on him doling out all this, distributing, divesting himself. And notice the suggestion. They say, so you're imagining him doling out everything, and you're thinking of, well, what's maybe the last thing that he might be doling out? You know, see, so they say, if God has withheld aught of himself from the universal creation, so maybe there's one, you know, that last thing that he's, oh, I don't know, I guess I'll give that up to, that's the last thing he's going to let go of, then of that residue, he is in lavish generosity bestowing the thought adjusters. Oh, and lastly, the infinite upholder. Right. Right, have we figured out long ago? Those thought adjusters here are fragments of that deity, that sixth facet, that lastly facet of the deity of the Father, the infinite upholder. See, and they're just hinting at that right there. Imagine what the last thing he would dole out is, see? The lastly, the infinite upholder part. So, you know, nowhere do they just point blank say it, but see, they're hinting at it all the time. Because they want you to get to the point where you put this together. And, you know, and you put it together without that, but then you're reading along and you notice that. It's like, oh, well, look at that. It's actually right there. Weren't they being clever there? You know, and then you go, and then you start wondering. It's like, well, do you suppose that super consciously, the fact that they said that set up something in my mind so that after years of reflection, it was kind of a seed where at one point I would go, wait a minute, I know what logically has to be. It has to be the infinite upholder is the reservoir out of which that adjuster is being fragmented, you know, ladled out. You really have to wonder about this. You know, how much is actually you being successful and engaging some of your intuition and getting some ahas just kind of all by yourself, you know, in relationship to the mother and all this, and how much some of it might have been kind of seeded gently like this. Because I've told you many times, you know, when I figured out some of these things, you know, and I had no awareness of a number of these sentences, you know, like the Paradise Trinity one is just like a classic, you know, where it says, it's, you know, truly one of infinity. It's the other side of, you know, one of the sides of the universal one of infinity. The fact that it just says that point blank, you know, and you didn't notice that until after the fact that you figured out, oh, well, it must be that one side of the universal one of infinity is the Paradise Trinity, and then you stumble upon that sentence. So, I mean, is that one of the ways they've constructed this, so that there's this sort of super conscious seeding? You know, and then they, you know, mentioning the adjuster, is the adjuster actually kind of working with that superconscious seeding, helping to find a way to get it down into an aha of consciousness? Mm-hmm. You know, which is the chicken and which is the egg here? You know, I mean, it's a very interesting thing to reflect on what might be going on superconsciously if you earnestly and holistically engage this and not consciously notice sentences, but superconsciously they will impact you. Yeah. So, just a fun thought about what you might be what might be actually going on as you read this earnestly. Things that you never imagined might be going on in your superconsciousness.
The Universal Father has poured out himself, as it were, to make all creation rich in personality, possession, and potential spiritual attainment. God has given us himself that we may be like him, and he has reserved for himself of power and glory only that which is necessary for the maintenance of those things for the love of which he has thus divested himself of all things else.
And if you've done what we just did in that previous paragraph, gotten the infinite upholder in front of you, when you read that next paragraph, you go, oh, that's clever. So what do they say right at the end there? So he has reserved for himself of power and glory only that which is necessary for the maintenance. He initiates and maintains, they say, at the beginning of the book. The maintenance of those things, okay, very immediately, simplistically, that maintenance is that infinite upholding. There's one thing that only he can do at the infinite level, as the infinite upholder, is maintain the cosmos by upholding the infinite. He holds the infinite, that facet of deity called the infinite, he holds the infinite up at the infinite level as the infinite upholder. If someone didn't do that, he's the only one that can, the only one that's got the hand span to do it, okay? The infinite would fill everything, and all you'd have is God, the infinite. Everything would be just that one facet of deity, the infinite, and it would be encompassed by infinite personality, and you'd have just one fact, God, the infinite. But he holds the infinite up, away from the finite, the absonite, the co-absolute, the co-infinite. He holds it up above all that, so all those domains can be. That's what they're referring to most fundamentally there. The maintenance of all things as the infinite upholder, which they were reminding you of in the previous paragraph. That's what's being fragmented as an adjuster. So, see, notice how when you start to, you know, to approach this from the deity vantage point, from that top-down point of view, like I said, they were encouraging you to do that. If you hold yourself in that top-down point of view, be looking for statements. It's rich with allusions to this, reminders of this, you know, is what it becomes when, you know, once you recognize it, then it's just, you know, it's reinforcing it over and over again. You know, what does the infinite upholder uphold, and why? And okay, so then next time we'll engage this last soaring passage of poetry here that many of you know well, especially toward the end there. I hope these last two sections, as we've unpacked them very slowly here over 4 hours. Really kind of gives you a, you know, some new life with this. I mean, just notice how much more is going on here than just telling you about local universes and creator suns. A little bit more is going on. You know, some things are being said here that are only said here because this is the appropriate place within the whole of the revelation that that aspect of the whole is most immediately present. You know, it's where it should be found. And you know, and it's like that everywhere. Like you've heard me say so many times, it doesn't matter where you're reading. There's so much more there than what immediately, say, a paper title or even a section title is, you know, factually speaking to. Because remember, it's a revelation of truth. And so that's what you're looking for, you know. So the paper title might be about, you know, cephalopods or something, okay, but... what's the truth that's flowing through that? You know, in the fullness, in truth, everything is flowing through every paragraph. You know, if we were greater minds, we could see that. We could see about how one of those paragraphs about biologic evolution also refers to every facet of deity and everything. I mean, actually, everything is in, you know, the truth of everything is in every paragraph, because that's what truth is. Truth is the embodiment of the whole. It brings the whole into every part. Imagine, you know, one day, I mean, certainly once you're done with the Masters of Philosophy on the Isle of Paradise, you'll be able to go back to this book and you'll be able to do that. You'll be able to see how God the ultimate and the consummator of universe destiny, you know, and this, that, and the other thing flow through one of those paragraphs about cephalopods. You'll see the whole in that, those statements. I mean, won't that be cool? To be able to see the whole in every fact, you know? You know, that's, you know, an amazing thing to imagine. One day you'll have that kind of relationship to the whole. That's why as a finaliter in that second half of your career, you go out, God the Mother, revealing. You go out revealing the individuality of the whole. See, because you now have that kind of a consciousness. You no longer are the part that the Father initiated. You know the whole and can testify to it, reveal it. To those who are coming up who only yet know part, you can enlighten them on the whole. You can bestow the whole upon them. You can accelerate the process. None of them have to do what you had to do, clawing your way up into relationship. You can give them all that you acquired, and then they can do things on your shoulders that you couldn't do. They can acquire a relationship to a higher level of the whole in their ascent. All these things like this, you can begin to see how this, you know, how this is designed to work. And all that is within deity. That's what orchestrates that whole amazing symphony, is the deity that's within. All right, let's take a moment here.